You've probably noticed billboards or been handed a pamphlet on the subway claiming that the world will end on May 21st. Well, since that's tomorrow, we thought today's Please Explain should investigate this claim and the long history of doomsday predictions and why, despite the fact that none have come true so far, they continue to be made. Joining us are Jesus Rodriguez Velasco, professor in the Department of Latin American and Iberian Cultures at Columbia University, who also teaches a course called The End of the World; John Hall, professor of sociology at the University of California, Davis, and author of Apocalypse: From Antiquity to the Empire of Modernity. It's published by Polity. And was it that Polity? I guess
Polity.
I got it right the first time, and then I corrected myself. And Doug Weaver, associate professor of religion at Baylor University. Welcome to our show.
It's good to be here.
Now, Doug, a man named Harold Camping is behind the prediction that tomorrow, May 21st, 2011, is the end of the world. Who is he?
Well, Harold Camping is somebody who has a radio show, and people, he's 89 years old, and people have been pioneering religion on radio for a long time. So you don't have to be well-known to make predictions about the end of the world. You just have to have a few people listen to you.
Well, do you know how he came up with this date?
Well, he's an engineer, and he loves math, and he thinks that the Bible is a coded math book. And a lot of people use math when they go to the scriptures. They find dates, especially in the book of Daniel in the Old Testament. They combine those with the book of Revelation in the New, maybe some other places. What's interesting about Camping is that he goes into what I would call Jewish numerology and goes beyond what most people would do. He gives numerical value to different words in the Bible, and then he multiplies those numbers and he comes up with dates. And it's actually quite detailed, quite complicated. He gives numerical value to things that nobody else has ever done before.
And he predicted an earlier date for the last day. I think it was 1993. Does anyone know whether he was embarrassed when it didn't come true?
I do know that he said that he needed to refine his predictions, that he had not taken into account all the numbers in the Bible. Specifically, he cites the book of Jeremiah in the Old Testament. So some people are embarrassed when they miss. Most people are not. If you think the Bible was a math book, you continue to refine your mathematical equations. That's what I have read about it.
Now, John, this is something that happens in many cultures. In all of them, is a belief in numerology or mathematics or some kind of code involved in making these kinds of predictions?
No, not at all. In fact, certainly in the long Christian traditions of apocalypticism, a great deal of emphasis is placed on an anticipation of the end and or the second coming of Christ, without having any prediction about it at all, and often it inspires social movements that have a seriousness to them concerned with the traumas of current events from which people are seeking redemption. So sometimes it's quite a serious movement that has little to do with numerology. Take the Reformation, for example. In England, the Reformation was quite bloody, and it was deeply inspired by a kind of sense that the existing social order was the great beast or antichrist, or call it what you will.
Well, they all come out of the book of Revelations, don't they? I saw a documentary about a year ago in which a young woman whose family was convinced that we were in the last days regretted the fact that she wasn't going to be able to go through the experiences that her mother and grandmother had gone through, getting married and having children. I'm assuming by now she's had that opportunity.
Right.
When I asked earlier if people are embarrassed, we have seen any number of situations where people have sold everything. They've hidden away in caves or in shacks, expecting the end to come, and then they've had to deal with the fact that that people made fun of them.
Well, right. The classic example is William Miller, who predicted the end of the world in 1844, and when it didn't happen, it became labeled the Great Disappointment. People had left their houses unlocked to go off and wait with fellow believers for the end, and it didn't happen. And, of course, some people felt that they had been completely ripped off by Mr. Miller. Others, however, went on to found the Seventh-day Adventists and Jehovah's Witnesses. So even an apocalyptic movement that fails in its precise prediction can have consequences for religion and society.
But why a great disappointment? Is the end of the world something that's seen as a positive thing?
Well, certainly if you're a believer and you believe that you're among the elect, as painful as it is to see non-believers lost in the traumas of the final days, the idea that you are among the elect and that you will be redeemed certainly has its attractions. And, of course, not everybody experiences life on earth as a complete bowl of cherries either. So the search for redemption is quite a serious matter for people who are really enduring suffering, whether it's emotional suffering or economic suffering or the traumas of social life.
Jesus, how long have there been beliefs that the world will end? Is this something that's happened throughout history, even before Christianity?
The fact that the world is going to end is, I think it has been there because people are aware that they are going to die and they need to think what's going to happen afterwards. So people have created all kind of narratives in order to explain what's going to happen afterwards to make this afterwards somehow thinkable.
And so if we're going to die, then eventually the world's going to die.
Yes, that's right. So the narrative involves also what's going to happen. Am I going to be redeemed? Am I going to be judged, etc.? All this is what is interesting in the narratives about the end of the world, I think, too.
But in the Western tradition,
yes,
we go back to the flood as well. We go back to Sodom and Gomorrah. There have been other cases where God decided that the world had become too immoral, and he pretty much ended the way things were.
Yes, and he, at the same time, he ended the things as they were, and he saved some people from it so that humankind could continue. The Apocalypse, or the Book of Revelation, is a completely different discourse, because in that discourse, St. John gives you the idea of how many people are actually going to be saved. 140,000 people are going to be saved. That's what's going to happen tomorrow, the rapture. So these 140,000 people will raise.
That's a very small amount.
It's not maybe very much for a whole history of humankind, right?
When John made the prediction, there weren't all that many people who had lived up to that time.
No.
Now we're talking about billions and billions of people who
are
not going to be saved.
Mm-mm.
So, Doug,
and you have to belong to one of the 12 tribes of Israel, because you have those saved are all the good Jews.
Well, what happened? So Christians who are not members of the 12 tribes, what happens to them?
That I really don't know, because there's why there is so much commentaries on the Apocalypse during the several centuries of Christianism. Yes.
Of course, within Judaism now, there aren't 12 tribes anymore. There are really only three groupings,
yes.
So that makes it more complicated. Doug, what's supposed to happen when the world ends? The Judgment Day, the Rapture, the Second Coming?
Yeah, you know, the language can be confusing about tomorrow. Campion says this is going to be the rapture of the elect bride, so the church is going to be removed. And then he says that the end of the world actually will come in October. I believe it's October 21st.
That's the Judgment
Day.
That'll be Judgment Day.
Right during football season.
Well, not this year. Maybe that's a reason. There's been a lockout for the NFL.
Well, that might be right. You know, this six-month period where the church has been removed is called the Great Tribulation. That's supposed to be a time of intense suffering. It's supposed to be a time when the Jewish nation is prominent and Antichrist takes charge, but ultimately is defeated at what you call the Battle of Armageddon. And the devil is loosed. They're supposed to be, what the rapture does, is it's this complicated language, but the rapture is supposed to come before the tribulation, and it's supposed to come before Jesus and all the saints have a 1,000-year reign, and Jesus would reign out of Jerusalem. So camping is following what you call a basic, we call it a basic dispensational system of the end of the world. You have a rapture, you have a time of tribulation, you have the consummation of the world where Jesus rules. But what he has done that other people don't do is that he actually sets a date, says it's guaranteed, and says that he's figured that out.
John, how does millennialism fit into predictions of the end of the world? Do you think it led to a lot of the fears around Y2K?
Well, clearly it led to those kinds of anxieties, but those were not particularly, most of them were not particularly religious anxieties, and you often see religious anxieties that are tied more to contemporary socio-political events. I referred to the English Reformation, for example. There were several people who made predictions then. One was John Napier, who invented logarithms, and he actually used logarithms to try to get a precise prediction about the end of the world. And his prediction, even with logarithms, he couldn't get it narrowed down any closer than it would happen between 1688 and 1700. But he made that prediction in 1593, which is hardly a millennial year.
How were his ideas received at the time?
Well, he was part of a broader and deeper, I would say, apocalyptic culture that fueled the Puritan revolution in England. And people certainly thought about them and talked about them, just as we're talking about Harold Camping today. But it would be a mistake today to think that Harold Camping is the only act in town when it comes to concerns about the apocalypse, or to think that people don't have serious concerns. I think maybe a way to think about it that's useful is that people are anticipating, often metaphorically, the end of the world, not the physical end of the world that would happen 4 to 5 billion years from now, but the end of the world as we know it. You look at 9/11, you look at the Great Recession, the BP oil spill, the Great Flood of 2011, all those kinds of events play into a kind of generalized apocalyptic zeitgeist.
We've had violent earthquakes recently,
That's right.
Tornadoes. There's a flood going on in the South right now. But Jesus, the reason I asked about millennialism, you're a medievalist, and I remember reading that there were predictions that the world would end at the year 1000.
Yes, there were predictions that the world was going to end in 1000, and then there was this very influential prediction of millenarism by Gioacchino da Fiore, in which he predicted that the world was going to end in 1260, and then Jean de Roquetaillade in 409. So there are many different, actually it's very interesting because many different predictions that start saying, I am not a prophet. I am just making science. And this is what I have come up with. And the world is going to end this year, or that year, or that year. And when they failed, the church nevertheless considered them saints or beati or things like that, yes.
But there are reports of people giving up their jobs, selling their homes.
Mm-hmm.
They stop saving money for their kids' college, because they think
especially
the world
giving their goods to the church, so that because that I think the end of the world is also about how churches cash.
So what happens with somebody like Harold Camping? Will he just go on and say, "Well, I got the math wrong," but the date is actually June 23rd, 2014?
Well, there will be before the Mayan end of the world next year.
Now, that's another thing. There are many people who this has nothing to do with the apocalypse, but there are many people who think that the end of the world will be next year. Shirley MacLaine has been talking about that.
Is she?
Is that because there's some kind of alignment of planets that is going to lead to
it? It seems that the Mayan calendar ends abruptly in some... It's a perpetual calendar, and it ends abruptly. I don't remember exactly a date, but it's
next
year.
December 21st, 2012.
There you go.
December 21st? Okay, I'm writing it down now.
Yeah, it's important.
Put it on your calendar.
Yes, you never know.
We have to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation, and we'll be taking listener calls. Our number here is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. My guests are Jesus Rodriguez Velasco, professor in the Department of Latin American and Iberian Cultures at Columbia University, John Hall, professor of sociology at the University of California, Davis, and author of Apocalypse, From Antiquity to the Empire of Modernity, published by Polity, and Doug Weaver, associate professor of religion at Baylor University.
I'll see you in the rapture.
It's gonna rain, it's gonna rain. You better get ready and bear this in mind. God sure knows, showed him the rainbow sign. He said it won't be water, but fire next time. Listen.
We're talking about apocalyptic thinking and apocalyptic history on today's Please Explain. And my guests are Doug Weaver, associate professor of religion at Baylor University, John Hall, professor of sociology at the University of California, Davis, and author of Apocalypse, From Antiquity to the Empire of Modernity. It's published by Polity. And Jesus Rodriguez Velasquez. Velasco, I'm so sorry, I've messed up your name totally. Jesus Rodriguez Velasco, professor in the Department of Latin American and Iberian Cultures at Columbia University, and the teacher of a class called The End of the World. We are inviting your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org. And let's go to our first caller. Hi, you are on the air. Arlen from Manhattan.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I had a couple amusing things to say about this from a scientific point of view. The first thing is, if you ask, the end of the world tomorrow is supposed to start at 6 o'clock local time. Where do they see 6 o'clock local time first? It's the islands of Kiribati in the Pacific, which is our midnight. So midnight tonight, we ought to know whether or not this is happening. Just stay tuned, I guess.
Well, we all understand that it'll either happen or not happen.
Yeah.
I guess the question for all the people who don't believe is, what is going to happen if it really does occur?
Well, I don't know. It's beyond me. The other amusing thing is I wanted to say that the prevailing scientific theory, this is going to sound a little strange, is that the Earth was already destroyed 50 million years after it was created. We live on a second version of the Earth.
Whose theory is that?
Well, it's Hartman and people like that. It's the predominant theory of how the moon was created, which was in a collision of Earth with a planet about the size of Mars. And the planet we live on now is also called Earth, but it's a very different planet than the one that was around until that happened.
And do any of my guests want to comment on that?
Well, I think that one of the interesting things there, certainly one point that scientists and religious prophets agree on, is that this planet eventually will come to an end. The only question is when.
Most people think it'll come.
There's a disagreement about that. But
most people think it'll come when the sun suddenly expands and then eventually swallows up the Earth and all the other planets.
That's right. That's right. The other problem, of course, is that the international dateline following up on your caller's point, the international date line wasn't established until long after the Bible was written, and so it seems a little bit strange to place that much of a burden on the international date line.
And on the other hand, one of the problems of this chronology of the Bible is that the non-prophets are considering that their watches are in the same time zone as God's watch, and probably they aren't. That's
we don't know what God's watch would be set to.
Yeah, one of the arguments is that for God, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like one day. So there's no way to calculate all that.
Well, the other thing there is that, and Doonesbury pointed this out, I think yesterday or today, that the New Testament's Matthew 24, verse 36, Jesus says very clearly that no one knows the hour and day, not even the angels in heaven, but only his Father in heaven knows. So that it seems, from that point of view, from Matthew, we might think that it's a little arrogant for mere earthly prophets to make precise predictions.
Now, Stella, one of our listeners, writes in, when was the book of Revelations written?
I think the date, correct me if I'm mistaken, but it's 93 or something like that. But the year 93. But then the problem with the writing of the Bible is also that the whole creation of the book, the Bible as we know it today, it's also the process of selection of many different redaction books, the exclusion of apocryphal and deuterocanonical and other things. So, but I think that they normally say that is 93 or something like that.
Does everybody agree on that date?
Yeah, that's approximately right.
This is Doug. Let me just pitch in. There's really no way to know. You're going to often hear scholars talk about the 90s or the era of the Roman Emperor Diocletian, because you're going to put the setting of the book in a period where Christians are being persecuted. So if you don't follow all these datelines, what is the ultimate value of the book is that it's a message of hope, that God will win and that God will be with you regardless of whether you're persecuted or not. And so it's often the idea that it's during that last decade of the century, but nobody really knows that. Anybody that would suggest any specific date is guessing. Early Christian centuries, up until the Bible was put in its final form, there were several Christians that didn't even include the Book of Revelation in their canon because, frankly, they didn't know how to read it. It was just it's always been difficult to understand.
Now, Doug, you recently answered questions about Harold Camping's prediction in the Washington Post blog. Were you surprised by how many people had questions?
Well, I'm surprised about how much, yes and no. I'm surprised about why we put so much interest in this. But as the other authors or your commentators have said, this has been going on for centuries, and Christians and non-Christians have always been interested in this topic. So in that way, I'm not surprised. I just like to throw one word out here. I think Camping, the whole idea of the 6 p.m., he likes dates, he likes to be specific, but I think the ultimate thing for people who follow him is that they trust a prophet, and a prophet needs to be certain, and so they have somebody that they can trust and who can be certain. In the Bible, in Matthew 24, as was cited a minute ago, says no one could know, the day or the hour. I studied a guy who predicted the end of the world in 1977, and he said, well, Jesus said no one could know the day or the hour, but that doesn't mean we can't get the year correct. And, but what happened with his followers, they needed to have somebody to trust amidst all the chaos of the world. They needed to have somebody to make sense of their lives for them. And to play off the book title, nobody wants to be left behind. And so, it's just this certainty. I'm a believer in God. I'm a Christian, but I live with ambiguity. And what Camping offers people is certainty, at least for a time. Now, after tomorrow, he'll have to reassess, probably, and he probably will. But
well, if he's wrong,
Well,
you know what happens. Some people, I think William Miller was mentioned. Sometimes you end up penniless and distraught, and you go off the scene. But oftentimes, just like Campion did in '94, you simply reassess, you recalculate. There have been plenty of predictions during American history where people will go, "Well, Jesus did return, but he returned spiritually, and so we are closer to him." But the physical return will come later. So there are a lot of ways that this can be explained.
Well, isn't end of the world not necessarily about destruction and death, but rather about salvation and a new order? There are other times of cultural upheaval when feelings that the world was about to end were prevalent.
Yes, I think that there is one very important question here is not how signs allow you to create the event of the apocalyptic thinking, but how the apocalyptic thinking allows you to create the events and to then say, well, now let's think about how apocalyptic thinking can help us understand things that are going on in our lives. And it's a very powerful analytical model, as a matter of fact. I think that John Hall has written a very important book about this. But also novelists are writing about this. For instance, let's say
there have been a lot of movies about the end of the world.
Yes, definitely. I remember this one of the last novels by Yuri Herrera, a young Mexican author, who uses the apocalyptic stories of the descent to Mictlan in order to explain how the immigrants, when they cross the borderline, they actually undergo the end of the world. And how this apocalyptic thinking can help you understand what they are going on. Things.
Now, in Mexico, we have a double apocalyptic whammy, don't we? Because it's a very Christian country, and at the same time, there's that whole Mayan tradition that we were talking about earlier.
And there is the Nahuatl theory.
It's the Nahuatl Aztec rather than Mayan.
No, there are the Mayan calendars, the Nahuatl descent to Mictlan, and then the Christian apocalypse. So they are very different narratives about the apocalypse.
My guests are Jesus Rodriguez Velasco, John Hall, and Doug Weaver. We are talking about the apocalypse on today's Please Explain, because there have been predictions that tomorrow will be the end of the world. You can call us at 646-829-3985 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's go now to Raymond from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. It's a fantastic show today. And it really shows that first of all, everybody's concerned about this because everyone is calling in, and I think you've been airing a couple episodes of this particular thing. My comment is this, is that the problem is that we don't want the end to happen. You know, whether, you know, I mean, we definitely need a total, you know, a leader or being or God to rule us, because man has failed that, you know, at every angle. You know, we say that, okay, look at the world condition, look at Katrina and all these other events that's happening. All these things are caused because of maybe our attitudes for one another. You know, we're not loving one another the way we should. There's no one controlling us. There's no one that has a ray gun pointing over us saying we have to do this and we have to do that.
Raymond, let me stop you for a moment. Yeah. I get your point, but are you saying that you think that tomorrow may be the end of the world?
Or? I'm saying that look. We covet everything that we know. We covet our money, we covet lust, we covet everything else like that. This thing tomorrow, whether it's next week, whether it's next year, is something that's real because we're talking about it, we're discussing
it. I'm sorry. May I interrupt you in 1 second? Because it has always been real throughout history. When the plague in 14th century, it created so much upheaval and groups and millenarists that were preaching about the end of the world. And likewise, at the beginning of 14th century, with all the preachers, Saint Vincent Ferré and many others who were predicting and making people actually give up their goods, their houses, everything normally to the church. And so there is always a possibility to pinpoint signs that fit within the predictions of the end of the world.
Because there's always going to be evil, and yes. There's always going to be upheaval and disease.
Evil and disease and poverty, yes.
Well, the other thing about it, those things are always with us. But the mm-hmm. interesting point, it seems to me, is that sometimes people feel these apocalyptic sentiments much more intensely than others. And I think the point the caller is making, and I certainly agree with Jesus, that there are many events historically that have brought forward apocalyptic sentiments. One of the things that we can wonder about today is whether technology has actually outreached our capacity to control it. When you see something like the tsunami and earthquake and reactor meltdown in Japan, it suggests a kind of, as the caller, as Raymond said, a kind of arrogance that we have created kinds of technology that are perhaps beyond our ability really to control.
Well, we have scientists who may or may not believe in the Bible who are talking about climate change and disastrous results from that.
Definitely. And we have also historians of the climate who have explained how this, like Emmanuel Le Roy Ladurin, who has explained how these climate changes are also cyclical and they have been going on for more than 1,000 years and things like that. But what is interesting also is how apocalyptic thinking also is necessary for certain communities to get some dynamics and ability to analyze what's going on in society. I was telling before that there is now one group who has given up everything they had in order to leave the end of the world in Bugarache in southern France, because it's perfectly place to live the end of the world. And they have created a new community, which is very close to all those communities of heretics in 13th or 14th century Europe.
The Albigenses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for instance, or the Beguines or things like that.
Well, yes, and the American counterculture in the mm-hmm. 1960s and the 1970s, without mm-hmm. having a kind of strong biblical orientation to the apocalyptic, there were many different kinds of groups. Some of them were seeking to bring on this dramatic world revolution, the dawn of a new age, a heaven on earth, if you will. Other people were going back to the land. So people act out their narratives. It's not just that these are narratives, but these are narratives that give meaning to people as mm-hmm. they construct their lives. And people do that and will do that, whether Harold Camping is right or wrong. People mm-hmm. will act out of an apocalyptic orientation to the world. And many of them do it in a way that doesn't have the intense date prediction that Harold Camping has, but has nevertheless an intense expectation and anticipation. Is it going to happen now? Is it going to happen next week? We need to be ready.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Chris from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, good afternoon. Let me first say that Mr. Camping is wrong, and here's one of the reasons why. The reason why no man knows the hour or the time, and the reason why God will let nobody know. Mr. Camping says that it has to be May 21st exact for Jesus to come. He said it's going to start in the Fiji and move across while the sun moving across the world. Now, this is ridiculous, because if you're living in Los Angeles, it means that you could be living in L.A., see the destruction and the rapture happening in New York, you have at least 3 hours to party, live wrong, do the wrong thing, and then when it comes up close to the time, say, oh Lord, forgive me, and then you'll be saved.
Now, in fact, the question would be where it would begin anyway. Would it begin in New York, the current Sodom and Gomorrah?
No, he said it's going to start in the east, in Fiji. That's his word. He said it's going to start in the east, and with the moving of the sun, so everywhere, it has to be 21st, has to be. So wherever the sun hits 21st first, that Jesus is going to come here, then to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. Now, if you're sitting, we have global TV, we could be sitting in Los Angeles and see destruction. Now, is that fear that you could live in Los Angeles, do wrong, and then when it comes up to your time, oh, then you raise your hand up and say, God save me. And here's another more important point. It's simple. Anybody who has a Bible home could go open the Bible and they would see the Bible says, in the beginning, in Genesis, the evening and the morning was the first day. The evening and the morning was the second day. The evening and the morning was the third day. In other words, God is saying that the night comes before day. This is why Jews start the Sabbath from a Friday night into Saturday in the day and not Saturday night as we know it.
Well, we haven't checked with Mr. Camping to find out whether he's following those rules.
In any case, he's a civil engineer.
On the West Coast, we're certainly glad to have those 3 extra hours. And,
yes.
And moreover, a lot of my colleagues are waiting to grade exams until they see what happens.
And what about people who are traveling? They are flying, for instance. How is it going to affect them?
Yeah, I think you should travel to the West.
There is a whole aesthetics of the rapture, in any case, that is going to be... Like in the apocalypse, there is this aesthetics of destruction that has haunted humankind, I think, for decades. So this is very, very visual. Very.
Well, I'm going to thank my 3 guests in order of where they live and when it's going to come to them first, beginning with Jesus Rodriguez Velasco, professor in the Department of Latin American and Iberian Cultures at Columbia University. Then Doug Weaver, who is in Texas at Baylor University. He is associate professor of religion. And John Hall, who is right in Davis. At the University of California, Davis. He's a professor of sociology there, and he's the author of Apocalypse, From Antiquity to the Empire of Modernity, published by Polity. Thank you all so much for being on today's Please Explain.
Thank you very much.
Leonard. It was great.
Enjoyed it. Thank you very much.